If you are a teacher, if you are a parent, if you are a grandparent, or hell, if you even know a kid, then this episode is for you. But it's especially for you if you enjoy saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. You heard that correctly. Because in today's episode, we are talking about higher education. And we understand that that can be incredibly expensive. But what if I told you there was a way that your high school students could attend college or university for free? What if I told you that your own children that live in your house could attend college or university for free? There are ways that we can make this happen for our students, for our kids, and for the youth of our community. But it really involves a strategy. And we're going to break that down in this episode because we have two people on this special episode that have attended college at no cost to them, via scholarships, via grants, via hard work, but also a solid strategy on how to cash in on literally every scholarship possible. This is a really interesting episode because obviously as teachers, we value education. The hard part about higher education is the price tag associated with it. So, if you are at least a little bit curious on how your students or your kids can attend college for free, you're definitely going to want to stick around. There is awesome in every single school day. Here is the big question. How can teachers like us, who love our job, love our students, and love being a part of education, celebrate awesome even more in our classrooms and learning communities? Where can we find teaching tips and tricks? Where can we find engaging stories and motivational strategies? That is the question, and this weekly podcast is your answer. So welcome to all my teacher friends. My name is Monica Genta, and I am so excited that you are here listening to this podcast, This Teacher Life. As a classroom teacher, I feel like college is really important because obviously I needed and you needed at least a four-year degree to do what we do on a daily basis. However, I do feel like the viewpoints and the vibes on college have changed, which is why I'm excited to sit down with a current college student to discuss some of the hacks that helped him not only be successful pre-college, but are continuing to help him be successful while in college. So, Will, welcome to This Teacher Life. Did you ever think that you were going to record your very first podcast on a teacher platform?
No, I didn't think I was ever going to do a podcast. So,
well, here you are. Okay, yeah. This is the start. He's probably going to end up on sports podcasts and other podcasts. People are going to be like headhunting you after this episode.
Maybe so.
He did earn dinner at the Texas Roadhouse for participating in this experiment because honestly, I've never had a non-adult. You are an adult. You're a legal adult. But I've never had somebody who's not a teacher on the podcast. And so I have a question for you to start out. It's a fill in the blank because fill in the blank questions are open-ended.
Got it.
So the blank is college is dot, dot, dot.
And only one word?
Yeah, let's start there. College is
demanding.
Demanding. Interesting. Okay. I didn't know what you were going to pick. So yeah. That I'm hearing this on the fly for the first time as well. I kind of predicted that you were going to say college is expensive. Will just finished his first semester at SIUE Edwardsville. And let me ask you this. Do you feel like part of the reason why you worked so hard and felt like college was demanding because of the scholarship that you received at college.
Yes, I would say that's the main motivator.
Like, how much of a factor is the fact that you're like, I really got to get my shit together because I am on a full academic scholarship?
I would say that's probably 80% of the motivation.
Okay. Yeah. So let's unpack that, because a lot of teachers are probably listening right now and thinking college is super expensive. Just some interesting statistics. Currently, the average teacher's salary, let's say, is around $50,000. And an average four-year university, we're looking at around $130,000 to $150,000 for a four-year university. And a lot of teachers also have kids. And that is a very difficult thing to wrap their head around, that college is four times and or five times more than their entire year's salary.
Yeah.
And Will heard my story, not because I want to flex, but because I understand that finances can be very scary and create a lot of fear. But something that I share with my students a lot was my journey as a pre-service teacher and as a high school student who, like you, took high school very seriously, okay? Had a 4.0 in high school and knew that academic scholarships paid big money. They just do. Worked really hard and had no student debt after 4 years because I was able to acquire and earn and work hard for scholarships. That was in, Lord, 2005. And I told you my story. You have heard my story probably. And you started rolling your eyes being like, oh my God. And even your mom,
yep,
was like, Monica, that's not realistic. Let's not do that. That's a lot of pressure to get your college fully paid for. That's a long shot.
Yes. Yes.
Be honest. When I said, dude, you can go to college for free, it can happen, what was your honest opinion on that?
I thought there was no way I thought I could go for like 2 or 3 years for free, but I thought there was no way I could go all four.
Okay. So you worked, because I want to say this. There should have been an asterisk with your kids, your students, your children can go to college for free. There's a huge asterisk with that, because that doesn't just happen. There is time, there is attention. I'm gonna go ahead and say it, tears at the kitchen island.
Yep.
There's a lot that went into it, but so much of it, I think, was based off of your grits and your stamina and your viewpoint that, like, you can do this. It's gonna be demanding, but I can do this. So let's kind of unpack, with spoiler alert, in case it isn't clear, Will did earn, and I'm going to say earn, a full academic scholarship to SIUE for 4 years. Insane. That's insane. Only 20 students received that type of scholarship. Is that correct?
20 a year, yep.
So let's rewind and talk about that path. How in the hell did you do it?
Well, I wasn't going to go to SIUE, which is the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of different scholarships lined up for sports.
Mm-hmm.
But they were about as full ride as you could get for the level,
mm-hmm,
that they were at. But
so you're looking at, just so listeners kind of understand, we're looking at like a few thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Which, yep, is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah, right? Yep. That's great. And then
I applied and I got in, and we researched scholarships through the university,
mm-hmm,
and we saw the Meridian Scholarship,
mm-hmm,
which we read about it, and it's the only full ride in the college,
mm-hmm,
and I thought there's no way I'm getting this, but I figured I'd apply anyways, and you know, mom wanted me to apply, and so I decided I would apply, and then from all the people that apply, they bring it down to 200.
They told you how many people applied. It was also listed on their website. Do you remember how many people applied? Thousands.
Yeah, like 1,000, right?
I think it was a whole lot more than that. I think it was like over 2,500 people applied for this scholarship.
Oh, yeah. So they take that number and then they bring that down to 200 for on-the-phone interviews.
So do the math on that.
Yeah.
Meridian Scholar.
That's a lot.
That's 10%.
That's crazy.
10% of kids got an on-camera interview and kind of grilled you.
Yes. So they asked everybody, all 2,500, they asked you a series of questions, and there was one big essay question. Mm-hmm. And then if you got chosen to be interviewed, they kind of did an overview of all those questions and wanted to hear what you had to say in person. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of, like the long essay question, left the last question kind of open-ended, and you can make your own. And I didn't worry too much about the interview. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of came in there just on my own accord and not pressured in any way, because I thought they were, it's kind of lucky and crazy that I'm already here.
Right.
So I went in there and I just answered the questions as truthfully as I could and as best I could. And then from those 200, they picked 20 for the full ride, and I got it.
I didn't expect to cry, but here I am. I'm crying because I think that, well, let me be clear. I've shed a lot of tears. Your mom has shed a lot of tears. Your grandparents have shed a lot of tears. There's been a lot of tears over that. And if you are a teacher who's listening to this, like, you understand the financial heaviness of all of this. And when you find out, like, that your kid is even in the running, even has the opportunity to apply for the Meridian Scholarship, like, that's crazy that you had the determination and the grit to even be able to apply for it, because there were academic things that you had to fulfill, and your GPA and your involvement in high school deemed him eligible to apply. And that was there were a lot of essays with the original scholarship.
Yeah,
I think. And it's one thing to woo somebody on paper with your words. It's a whole nother thing to be on camera with a panel of people. And you kind of went into this with this mindset. I know you said, like, I can't even believe I got it this far, so I'm not going to be too nervous. But I think you all are also cutting yourself a little bit short, because you prepared for that.
Yeah.
Like, we did hypothetical questions with you. Yeah. You know, as somebody who speaks and writes for a living, I was like, listen, let me tell you about some strategies that I've read to really captivate audiences. And you listened, and we tried a few things. And I don't want you to go in thinking, like, it was like, well, whatever. I just logged in and thought, what the hell? It wasn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some strategies that I thought about. And they gave all 200 people who got interviews, they got a loose list of what they might ask. They weren't word for word. They were just saying things like they may talk about this.
Hypothetical, right.
So I looked at those and kind of prepared a little bit what I might say if they asked about it. Mm-hmm. But most of it, you just got to go in there relaxed. And I think they could definitely tell the difference.
Yeah.
That I was relaxed and being my authentic self rather than what they want to hear.
Yes. And I think that there was a really important word that was used there with scholarship applications. Something that I think is undervalued maybe from the writer's standpoint is authenticity, because there's a right answer, like a scripted answer that they probably read hundreds of times. And then there's the, whoa, that stood out. Oh, we haven't read that today. So let's kind of unpack this just a little bit. So every university that I've ever researched, because we did a lot of research on different universities, and I knew what Eastern did because I attended Eastern Illinois University, the Harvard of the Midwest, and there was a full academic scholarship at that university called the Presidential Scholarship, okay? And that was room and board for 4 years. Everything was paid for. At SIUE, it's called the Meridian Scholarship. And you had certain GPA requirements, but there were how many essays?
I think
in the initial application,
there were about 10 short essays and then one, I would say, medium length essay.
And I will say, I saw the list of essays, and a lot of them were exactly what you would predict, right? Talking about weaknesses and things like that. Is there any that stood out besides the color choice? We're going to get into the color choice in a second.
No, they were all pretty typical for what you'd see on all the scholarship applications.
In fact, as you started applying for scholarships, both at a university level and at a community level, because friends, let me tell you, teachers, every single bank, every single church, every single American Legion, Daughters of the American Revolution, like all of these organizations in your community also have scholarships in which you applied to all of them.
Yes, the community-based scholarships are a lot more profitable than a lot of people think.
Yeah.
A lot of the $500 and $1,000, they add up pretty quick.
Big time.
Because it's a smaller pool, so that automatically increases your chances.
Yeah.
And especially if you just, what I would recommend is keeping a list of all that you've applied for and the questions they've asked and also your responses.
Right.
Because you can use a lot of the responses for different questions and tweak it in a different way.
Correct.
For different scholarships, and that saves a lot of time.
100%. I couldn't agree more. I didn't have Google Drive when I was applying for scholarships in, like, 2003 or whatever, but I did have, I swear to God, a floppy disk. I had a floppy disk, and I did the exact same thing. I saved every essay because a lot of the prompts are similar.
Very similar.
And so I think with scholarships, like kind of what you're alluding to is, yes, there is grit, and yes, it's a time vampire, but a lot of it is the strategy behind it. And people say it all the time, and it sounds very cliche, but like, working smarter, not harder. You've done the hard work. You got a 4.0 in high school. You've done the hard work. You got an A in calculus, honors calculus, right? That's the hard work. Now let's use strategy to capitalize on that from an academic standpoint. So you made a great point too. $500 here, $250 there, $1,000 here adds up. And so you got a lot of those in addition to your Meridian scholarship, which is amazing. I want to take a second to talk about something that never really came up in our conversation, but I think it's absolutely worth mentioning. Because sometimes when we hear about people who get large academic scholarships, parents and maybe teachers and maybe even students have this vision in their head of the type of person who gets these scholarships. We often use terms like book smart or naturally intelligent or high IQ. And I think all of those things are real. But one thing that I will say is that when we are looking at who receives scholarships, they are truly for a variety of reasons. People say, oh, they got it. Of course they're going to get it. They're naturally gifted. Oh, of course they're going to get it. They've got a 4.0. I think that there are not necessarily specific characteristics that people are looking for with scholarships. I think it's honestly more about the person's character. As an example, one thing that Will and I shared off camera and off microphone prior to recording was that both of us, interestingly, shook every single person's hand that we could when doing in-person interviews for scholarships. And I know that might sound like a really basic thing, that when you are done with the interview, shaking everyone's hand and saying, thank you so much for the time to meet, that really meant a lot to me, and it coming from a genuine place, I think those are likely things that stand out. Those aren't necessarily things that were taught in a biology textbook, and those aren't necessarily things that all kids would do. And so I want to just be really, really clear. If you are listening to this episode and you're like, I know the types of kids who get these scholarships, I want us to really ask ourselves what kind of stereotypes we are building in our heads, because I think gone are the days of kids fitting into a box when it comes to academic or social and emotional excellence. But I want to go back to one of the essay prompts, because he showed it to me and he's like, what does this even mean? And I was like, oh, I love this. Let's talk about this. Because it was very abstract.
Yes, it was.
Tell everyone what the final prompt was. This was the extended essay.
Yes, this was the longer one. So the question talked about how there's a lot of grayness in life, and how there's not always one right answer, and you can go about things a different way and come out with the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have never been a great
gray area.
Yeah, I'm not very accepting of the gray area.
You like clear cut, yes or no?
I do like clear cut.
Uh huh.
But they explained how that's a thing in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question was, red, green, or blue, and that was it.
Then you're right.
Yep. So
he read it so many times. I happened to be sitting there with you when you were reading this, because yes, this at this point is pre-interview, okay? Uh-huh. So this is, they just publish these questions like out to the open. Like people can see these questions. So he downloads them, is going through them. And I remember the moment when you read it, you're like, there is no question. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he keeps reading and he's like, there is no question. And I said, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because this, I've read a lot of like business psychology and stuff like this. And it's just really interesting, like human dynamics, especially for students like you. And if I had to guess, a lot of Meridian scholars are similar, and we have a lot of students who are similar. As a science teacher, labs and discussion questions are often open-ended. And if we think about it, who struggles the most are students who are like, so is it right? And we're like, well, it could be. How do you want to explain it? And they're like, but is it right? A lot of intelligent individuals struggle with this. And so when I read it, I'm like, well, you could choose a color.
Yeah.
Or you could do something completely different. And I will leave it up to you if you want to talk about what you did, because you didn't really pick a color.
Yeah. Well, so I remember I had already written like 10 short essays. And
uh-huh.
Then I read that question and I was just mad.
You were over it.
I was just mad.
Yeah.
I was ready to be done, because I thought there's no way I'm getting this anyways.
Uh-huh.
wasting my time writing 10 essays.
Uh-huh.
But I read the question, and I didn't understand it. And then we kind of brainstormed a little bit, and I came up with how most people are probably going to talk about the color and what it symbolizes, that kind of thing. But
because that's obvious.
Yeah, that's...
That's obvious. It's not a question, but they're kind of leading you to pick a color.
Yeah, you wouldn't be wrong to think that's what they want you to write about.
Correct.
And I thought, since I hated these kinds of questions and I hated this question too, that I'd talk...
I love your honesty on this. This is great.
I would talk about how I'm terrible at those questions and I really hated this question.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked about how I need to be more open to this grayness in my life, and how I was gonna put into place strategies and things to optimize the grayness and make it useful. And then at the end, my last sentence was, P.S. I pick blue. That's the only time I talked about a color.
Only reference to a color.
Yep.
And what I love about that was he said it earlier and it really was highlighted in that final essay. He's like, I was just kind of authentic. He said, I don't like this question. I don't like questions like this. And he actually magnified, honestly, a weakness.
Yes.
But really transformed that into a strength. And I just want everyone to pretend for a second like you're the panel of people reading 2,500 essays.
Yeah.
33% of them, people are picking red. 33% of them, people are picking yellow. 33%, right? Like, there was a variety. And then here comes this kid being like, well, you know what? Honestly, I know this is what you didn't say. This is not a direct quote, but this is a dumb question. You didn't even really ask a question. This is bogus. You've really highlighted a strength or a weakness of mine. I'm mad, so I'm not going to answer your stupid question. P.S. Blue.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, I don't know if that is the thing that caused yours to stand out and say yes, but I am 100% confident it stood out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's what I don't think that's probably the answer that they were looking for, but I think they were just looking for things that stood out.
Uh-huh.
And I think that definitely stood out.
At one point, there was another essay question that was pretty serious, and correct me if I'm wrong, you went ahead and decided to start with a knock knock joke.
Yes, that was the same essay.
That was the same. You literally started with like choose the color and you're like knock knock.
Yeah, knock knock. Who's there? It's me. That's what I started with.
Okay. And then you tied that into it's me who's mad at this essay. It's me who wants to go to college, but also not. Can we talk about that for a second? Because this is probably the zinger of the whole story. You didn't even want to go to college in the first place.
Nope. I've always liked working outside and working with my hands, and I think that there's a lot of need for people who don't go to college right now, which is
very true. That's true.
It's true, and a lot of tradespeople are retiring, and it's area of work that needs new people. So I really just wanted to do that because I've always been interested in that. But you know, my mom's made a good point. She said, well, that's all fine until you hurt yourself and you don't have a backup plan. So
I think her quote, her direct quote is, that's great till you're putting shingles on a roof and you fall off and you break your back. And, you know, she always says, then you got your brain to fall back on. Yep. Okay.
Yep. And she wanted me to exercise my brain. Okay. So
and here's the cool thing that I love about your generation, and I agree with you. This is a tough thing for a teacher to say. I completely agree with him and 100% believe that our students can be incredibly successful without a four-year degree. I don't think the four-year degree necessarily holds the same weight that it did for me as a millennial. We need incredible people in the trades, exactly like what you were talking about. And people in the trades and in joining the military and starting their own businesses at 18 can be wildly successful and have such an amazing journey, and so many like great choices are being made outside of college or university. With that said, you kind of decided, I'll get a four-year degree, and if I want to be in the trades, I'm going to be in the trades.
Yeah.
But I might as well, especially if I can do it for free.
Exactly.
Yep. Get a four-year degree.
Yep.
So here you are, getting your four-year degree, but still, like literally today, I convinced him to do this after he has worked construction over your winter break.
Yep.
You did demo and did it like a sledgehammer, I don't even know what, for 8.5 hours.
Yep.
And you liked it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay, so that's what I think is really, really cool about this journey. And we're going to do one big takeaway, because your biggest concern about scholarships was, it's my senior year. Mm-hmm. I want to have amazing experiences with friends. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to have a job so that I can make money and have some money so I can go to Chipotle with the guys and all of this stuff. How am I supposed to go to school, be incredibly great at tennis and be all state and all conference at tennis, which was amazing, which is what his potential sports scholarship was for, have a job, have friends, and enjoy your senior year? Mm-hmm. Scholarships felt like a full-time job to you, but you kind of created this really great hack that I love. Tell us about how you combined making money on scholarships while making money at a job.
Yeah, so it's not something that you can do at a lot of jobs.
Right.
So I over last year, I worked at a baseball training academy as a front desk person. So I sat there and checked people in and helped them find the equipment they needed. But a lot of the times there would be downtime, and you could use that time to do whatever you wanted. I mean, you could watch TV shows if you wanted, but a lot of the time I would spend that working on scholarships.
Yeah.
And then I knock those out there, get those done. And then I bring it back home, and my mom would proofread it, which I think is very important.
Yeah.
I think you need to have a good proofreader, whether that's a parent or a teacher.
Yeah,
or
for sure.
Anybody. But you definitely need a proofreader. But also, I think it's important that if you can find a job where you can work on schoolwork and scholarships and that kind of stuff while you're on the clock, that kind of optimizes your time and leaves a lot of time for you to do other things that are more fun than scholarships.
Yeah. That's such a great hack that, like, I don't think kids and probably parents and teachers think about enough. Like, you got a car, you got to pay for gas, you want to have some fun money, these kinds of things. And if you don't get these huge scholarships, college is expensive. So the fact that you found a job where you could make money every single hour and then also potentially make thousands of dollars in that same hour is awesome.
Yep.
So having your child or encouraging your students to find a job where there is some downtime. And like you said, he could have been watching TV, scrolling on your phone.
Yep.
I have seen kids, especially at gyms, like taking a nap at the front desk. And I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's not okay. But actively choosing to do something wildly productive with your time. Uh-huh. Okay. Any final thoughts that you have?
I think that getting the scholarship is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
But so does a lot of times with these scholarships, especially the ones that you get through the universities or through the schools, they require you to do have a certain amount of success mm-hmm. within your classes,
mm-hmm.
which I think a lot of the times people think getting the scholarship's the hard part. Mm-hmm. And that's once you get it, it's cakes and candles from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's also very difficult to keep up with those requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I could have been more prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I would have gotten a little bit more heads up on that, that the work isn't done when you get the scholarship,
mm-hmm.
but it makes it easier to get the work done after you get the scholarship.
Ooh, okay. I like that. And just, I think maybe even the mindset of, yeah, it's really hard to work and keep these grades in college, but you are currently attending at no cost to you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the pressure of, I'm at college, I'm going to have thousands of dollars of loans.
Yeah.
And that's going to be pressure when I join a career
uh-huh.
that might not pay a lot.
Yeah.
And the domino effect of that.
Yeah, it really locks you up.
One of the big takeaways from this episode that I see from my vantage point is the next time that a student says, grades don't even matter, what we could very easily argue is that grades pay huge amounts of money. There are tons of different ways that students can earn scholarship outside of academics. There are sports scholarships. There are merit-based scholarships. There is financial aid that you can apply for based off of your family's income through the FAFSA program. However, one of the secrets to success to going to college for free is making those grades pay for your future. So the next time a student asks you, what's the point? Grades don't matter. It doesn't even make a big deal if I have a D or an F on my report card. You can use this episode as leverage and proof that grades are worth literally thousands of dollars. And prior to really breaking this down with Will, I knew it was possible when I went to college because of the path that I did with grades. But I think it's even cooler that in the year 2026, there is still a path to free college and free university that is truly based off of academic excellence. And that is a really cool thing. Additionally, I think that I could easily have done another episode about FAFSA because I have had students who maybe weren't high honor roll students, but worked freaking hard. And they have great ideas and they have hearts for their community. And they were able to also go to college or university at low cost or no cost because of other avenues. Overall, the thing that I really want to take away from this is that as teachers, we have to show them all the paths to their future. Whether that is helping them on a path into the trades, into the military, into a career, or into a college or university, there are so many different ways that we can help students be successful. And a lot of the times it means that we as educators, we as adults, we as parents or people who are passionate about teenagers We just have to show them the strategy in order to have the most possible success. And I think part of that is equipping our kids with really useful life skills. That's one of the reasons why I wrote 180 Days of Awesome SEO. It is a year-long, 180-day curriculum that is packed with things that are going to help them be successful in life, college, and career readiness. All of the things that you need to lead a transformative lesson are already planned and prepped for you, including questions, links, activities, discussions. And that is why I think 180 Days of Awesome SEL could be an amazing tool for you to use in your classroom. Whether you teach elementary students, middle school students, or high school students, because there are multiple versions of this curriculum that are age appropriate for all kids. If you want to check out this life skills curriculum, you can go to monicagenta.com/180SEL. That's monicagenta.com/180SEL. And I'm also going to put a direct link for that in the show notes. Now, I loved having Will on this episode and he knocked it out of the park, but I also understand when you get lost in conversation with somebody, perhaps there are still some questions that you have, or maybe there were gaps in our conversation. So if you have any questions after listening to this episode, please don't hesitate to reach out via email, reach out via social media, and I would love to answer any additional questions that you have based off of our journeys into having the most possible success with scholarships and zero cost university. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode, but most importantly, thank you for living this teacher life.